What is up? Welcome to another edition of the NFL Fantasy Live Podcast. It's me, your man, MG Marcus Grant, alongside the Fantasy Hall of Famer, Michael Fabiano, and the Fantasy Viper, Graham Barfield. And happy week one. We made it, y'all.
It's here, man.
We survived the long, dark night of the preseason, and now we have emerged into the sunshine of the regular season.
Did we, though?
Sort of.
We kind of have.
Sort of.
Yeah. Boy, this weekend was just...
It's not been a fun weekend.
Insane. I know. We barely survived. Like, I was in Phoenix, and, like, I was, you know, trying to update my rankings, and it was an interesting day or two. So
I didn't even attempt to top 200. I knew it would be worthless. Like, somebody who's going to get, like... Well, multiple people got cut, and we'll get to that.
We'll get to that. We got lots to talk about because, yes, there were cut downs over the weekend as all the teams got to 53 men on their rosters. So there were some surprising names, maybe not some not-so-surprising names that got let go, but definitely some names that shook things up in fantasy. So we will talk about that. Oh, by the way, happy Labor Day, guys.
That's what we labor
here,
on
here. In the States, it's Labor Day for most people, but we're at work. So
it's not too bad. I mean, we're just here this morning. I mean,
no, it's great because I got on the freeway and it took me less than 10 minutes to get to work. Yeah. Like the Lord intended, it took me less than 10 minutes to get to work as opposed to most work days when it's like 35 or 40
minutes.
You have
a drive now.
I do.
I still have a little bit of just a walk.
Where did you move to?
I am sort of in no man's land. Okay. Like technically, I think I'm Inglewood, but if I walk one block west, I'm El Segundo. If I walk two blocks south, I'm Hawthorne.
That's right. Are you like preparing for like the eventual move in 2021? Now you're even closer.
I am super close, and like I can drive by it. I see it off the freeway in the morning. It looks like a giant dinosaur skeleton rising up out of the ground.
I flew over it yesterday.
Yeah,
took a picture.
Yeah, the stadium there. The stadium
looks pretty cool when you fly over.
Yeah, it's awesome. Yeah,
and actually, when you drive up close to it, it's cool too. I see it every now and then, just because there's like a really awesome Jamaican restaurant like across the street from the stadium that my girlfriend and I go to every once in a while. So we kind of get, you know, sort of our own little progress reports on it. But it looked great.
Nice.
So we'll talk about the things that happened in the weekend. We'll talk about just kind of a draft season wrap up now that we're at the end of fantasy draft season. Some things we learned, some guys that we love and don't love, and maybe some things that we'll remember or try to remember for this time next year so we don't make some of the same mistakes again. Plus, the season's starting. So I know a lot of you have done your drafts, but there's still guys on the waiver wire. It's never too soon to start making waiver wire moves. So we'll throw out some early preseason, early season waiver wire names to keep an eye on. So it should be a pretty full show today. But before we get all that in, we'll go behind the glass and talk to our faithful producer, Senior Edward L. Murphy Esquire. Murph, what's up?
It is just so wild that it's already week one. Like, I feel like it was just yesterday. Like me, you, and Grant, we were all headed down to freezing cold Indianapolis
for the
combine. And now today it's going to be like 90 degrees here. Football starting. Like it's like I watch college football the entire weekend.
Yeah,
it's absolutely crazy.
Yeah.
Like, dude, snap of fingers.
I was in Arizona and it was 106 degrees.
Mm-hmm. Sounds comfy.
And I was at AIC. It was maybe 7:30, 8 o'clock, and it was 100 degrees.
That's crazy.
Disgusting.
Yeah.
Oh, it was
brutal. Yeah, I mean, that's Phoenix for you.
I've never been there before in the summertime.
Oh, yes. No.
It's not pleasant.
My best friend lives there, and I tell him all the time, I can come visit you from, like, October to, like, April. And even April's kind of pushing it. But after like, mid-April, I'm like, you got to come see me because I'm not coming to visit you anymore.
It is good there at nighttime, though. When you want to walk outside when it's still warm, you can sit and eat dinner outside. That feels good because sometimes in L.A., it does get chilly at night.
It cools off.
You can wear a jacket and stuff. Like, you can go, you know, T-shirt, shorts in Phoenix, no problem at all.
Right. So, all right. So, enough of that. It's getting hot in fantasy world. So, let's do some news.
Through the news.
Well, let's start with these holdout running backs here because we had some news that came out over the weekend, plus a little bit of news that hit Twitter just about an hour before we started recording here. So we kind of just lumped these in together, right? First, with Melvin Gordon, the Chargers over the weekend gave him permission or gave his reps permission to go out and seek a trade. They have also said that they will suspend all talks with him until after the season. So basically, the situation for Melvin Gordon is you either play for us, you figure out a trade, or you don't play at all, which I guess is the situation for most guys. But so he's sort of in limbo right now. It looks like nothing is really moving on that front. And then other piece of news, Jane Slater, our own Jane Slater here, just tweeted out about an hour ago.
Yeah, this sucks.
A source informed tells me that while talks with Cowboys running back Ezekiel Elliott continued late Sunday, the deal is still, quote, not close. When I asked what's holding it up, the answer was the same as last month, quote, everything. So here we are, guys. We are a couple of days away from the regular season starting, and there are two major backfield pieces that are missing. I had been of the belief that Zeke would get something done, that Melvin Gordon might drag on a while, but Fabs, it looks like both these guys may be a little bit away from actually showing up and playing football right now.
Yeah, I'm sticking with what I've said all along. I didn't think he would miss regular season games, and if he did, it would be one or two. That's where I'm at. That's where I'm still at. And, I mean, listen, I understand that the uncertainty causes a lot of stress in our lives. You know, fantasy owners were a little squeamish with all this kind of stuff.
Just a little.
Just a little bit. But also remember that, I mean, when Zeke was suspended for six games, he was still like the RB12. Mm-hmm. I mean, the dude is going to produce. So I'd rather still take him in the first round and have to reach a little bit for Tony Pollard to ensure myself or draft depth at running back than miss on his production because it's coming. As for Gordon, see, that I have no Gordon shares at all because people were drafting him before I was comfortable doing that. I still have three drafts left, so we'll see where he ends up now. But I've always said that I thought Gordon was going to miss regular season games and potentially significant regular season games.
Yeah, I'm with you on this. I think the Chargers saying that, hey, you can now actually look for a trade is basically just telling him your trade market is zero. And you have two options. You can either hold out for the entirety of the season or come back at some point and play for us. That's really what the Chargers are trying to say.
Who is going to give up anything significant for Gordon?
No one is.
And who is going to pay him more than $10 million a year? No one. No.
Right.
Gordon is shooting himself in the foot, to be honest.
Yeah. And I am all for guys going out and trying to get paid. But I think that the reality is Gordon just doesn't have that kind of leverage right now. I know people are still drafting him in the fourth, fifth round. He's still coming off the board. But that just looks a little sketchy. It makes me feel better about the places where I have Austin Eckler and or Justin Jackson right now because I don't see a real end to this anytime soon. Zeke, on the other hand, is the one that because I believed he was going to get something done fairly quickly. I've been saying it's hard to see him getting out of the first round, even with all this dragging on. But at the same time, you know, I've also been advising folks to go get Tony Pollard and wear this.
Yeah, dude, you have to just be smart about it. Listen, if you want Zeke, you're going to have to possibly reach for Pollard. It's just part of the deal.
I'm drafting. I've got a few drafts left, and I'm taking Zeke at 4 or 5 overall.
Yeah, I am too.
Still, because, I mean, Rich Rebar made this good point. Sharp Football's Rich Rebar this week. He made a point. It was like, you know, we know when Zeke was going to be suspended, he was still like the RB5 or RB6. In ADP, like we were still taking in the back half of the first round, early second round. Right now, he should not be slipping too far. They'll get something done here. It's just annoying that this has all been done through the media, essentially. These contract negotiations have been done through the media.
Yeah, I saw there was a couple of high-stakes league, or at least one of them, where Zeke fell to like the 11th overall pick. There's no way I would let him fall that far. Heck no. Just can't do it.
Yeah, I mean, this is the thing, we'll sort of dig into kind of this thing a little bit later on. We do this draft season wrap up, but this is one that has sort of become maybe a little more involved than I thought it was going to be. So we'll see what happens. We'll definitely be keeping an eye on that as it goes along. Other big running back news that hit over the weekend, and Graham, I know you said you had takes on this, so I'm very interested to talk about this now. The Bills over the weekend cut LeSean McCoy. I don't know that was a huge surprise. Like, I felt like that was a case of a team's actions being different than their words. Like, publicly, they kept saying that he has a role on this team. We're going to get him involved in the offense. But everything the Bills did suggested otherwise. Going to get Frank Gore, drafting Devin Singletary, adding TJ Yeldon. It just suggested that maybe they were ready to move on. So, not long after he got cut, he signed somewhere, which isn't a surprise. He signs in Kansas City. So, they've already got Damian Williams. They've got Darwin Thompson, who became everyone's fantasy darling in the preseason. And then a report hits The Athletic saying that McCoy could, quote, take a large percentage of the backfield snaps. Graham, takes, go.
Yeah. let's back up here. Like, the Bills saved $6.4 million by cutting LeSean McCoy. Now, granted, he's coming off the worst season of his career. I mean, he averaged like under 3.2 yards per carry, was in the bottom of the league in success rate, missed tackles forced, yada, yada, yada. But now he's in this just absolutely perfect situation with a coach he's got history with. To me, it speaks volumes that like Kansas City not only went out and immediately jumped to get LeSean McCoy, but they gave him more guaranteed money than Damian Williams. McCoy got around $3 million in guaranteed money. Again, in September, a little bit different than Damian Williams getting $2.1 million guaranteed, kind of a buy-low opportunity I think the Chiefs saw in December or January last year. But many people think that McCoy is done, and Andy Reid doesn't. That matters to me. You know?
Yep.
That matters.
I tweeted out yesterday that when McCoy was released, he was a 31-year-old washed-up running back, and no one was surprised. When he signed with the Chiefs, McCoy was still a 31-year-old running back who is washed up and now is going to put a major dent into the touches of Damian Williams. Like, this thing can go several ways.
Yes.
McCoy could start and Williams be the third down back. Williams could start and be in a backfield committee with McCoy. Regardless of the situation, it's all bad for Damian Williams. I dropped him down to the running back three area. I would feel safe taking him as a flex starter just because of the historical success running backs have had under Andy Reid, the fact that McCoy has not looked good this past season in Buffalo. But, I mean, this one hurts. If you drafted Damian Williams as your two or maybe even your one, you got to be scratching your head right now.
I still think Damian Williams has league-winning potential. It's just now his range of outcomes is significantly, significantly wider. I was buying Damian Williams because I thought he had a high floor. It was basically like, okay, if he can just overtake Carlos Hyde, which he did with ease, and you know, outplay Darren Thompson, which he was going to do, you know, he had a pretty high floor. Now that floor is significantly shrunken with McCoy on the field. I still think these guys can be like weekly flex plays because the offense is so good and because there should be plenty of scoring opportunities, but just like, I really don't know what the touch split is going to be. I could see a true like 50-40 split between these.
And it could be different week to week, depending on who's got, you know, who's hot in the backfield that week.
Right.
Are we sure LeSean McCoy is washed? I mean, I know the numbers were bad last year, right? 2 years ago, he had 1,500 scrimmage yards.
Please play devil's advocate because I did this.
I'm doing it right now because two years ago he had almost 1,600 scrimmage yards. 2 years ago, still playing in Buffalo. Last year the Bills had arguably the worst run blocking line in the National Football League. And yes, I know Josh Allen ran for a whole lot of yards, but so many of those were improvised, not planned yards that he picked up.
Right.
Look, I know he's 31 years old. I know he's put a lot of wear and tear into this thing. I'm just not convinced that we have seen the last of LeSean McCoy.
Especially now because this is. The spot for a running back to have, you know, advantageous box situations, be put in space in the passing game. I mean, Andy Reid's screen game is the best in the NFL. But let's back up to McCoy's ineffectiveness last year. I pulled this up last night. LeSean McCoy faced one extra defender in the box, so basically he had at least one unaccounted for defender by the blocking scheme on 45% of his carries last year. That was the second most in the NFL behind Chris Carson. You mentioned the Bills' offensive line. They ranked 20th of 32 teams in yards before contact last year. The Chiefs were third best, top three. I mean, I'm with you. Like, McCoy probably doesn't have the same juice he had in his legs when he was 25. He probably doesn't have the same cuts.
None of us do.
Yeah, he doesn't have the same juice in the same cuts he has. But, like, this is the scheme for running backs to succeed on limited touches.
Yep.
And both Damian Williams and McCoy, for me, are like RB3 flex plays week one.
Yeah, and McCoy last season, 314 yards after contact, 227 total rush yards after contact. I mean,
yeah,
those indicate
his after contact numbers were really, really bad last year.
Those indicate a guy that's on the downturn. Let's put it that way.
Sure, but okay, so you're on the clock right now.
Yeah,
where are you taking both of these guys?
So I was in a draft last night. I believe Williams fell until the fifth round.
That feels about right.
And I it wasn't me that took him. And then McCoy still went right around the same time he was going when people were expecting him to be the lead back in Buffalo.
I feel like some of that, though, is because a lot of sites, you know, like because this thing happened over the weekend, it wasn't like he got moved up in a lot of draft rankings. And so it's easy to sort of forget. And you're like, oh, yeah, you start scrolling. You're like, oh, yeah, LeSean McCoy's here. Let's go get him. So I think that's sort of a function of just, you know, programming more than anything else.
True.
Let's go back to Buffalo, though, now, right? So McCoy is out of the picture. Devin Singletary was a name that was becoming more and more popular over the last couple of weeks. But there is a story, I believe also in The Athletic, if I'm not mistaken, that says he will not be a featured back very early in the season. That it could be the immortal Frank Gore.
Oh, jeez.
You know, that maybe we see some TJ Yeldon and some Singletary sprinkled in. Does this change how either of you feel, or is this more of a wait and see till like the back half of the season for him?
Yeah, so I talked to Devin's agent, and from what he's told me, it's going to be Gore and Devin. They're going to be in the backfield. Maybe you'll get a little TJ Yeldon sprinkled in there. I wouldn't be surprised if Gore starts week one, but I wouldn't be surprised if it was Singletary either. They're not going to push Singletary into a featured role right out of the gate. I would think, as you mentioned, that maybe the touches will increase somewhat as the season rolls on. I don't see a true featured role for him right now.
Yep.
Because Frank Gore is there. It's kind of like expecting a quarterback to start 16 games when Ryan Fitzpatrick is on the roster. It's just not going to happen. So I would temper expectations with Singletary at the beginning of the season. I have him ranked as a running back three that I'd probably rather have as a four in a 10-team league, but that's where he is at this point.
Singletary offers by far the most upside here,
yes.
But I'm with you on Gore. He's definitely going to take some early down snaps, definitely going to take some of the goal line work, and TJ Yeldon will probably mix in on third downs. This was always in the range of outcomes, like we mentioned. I mean, the Bills saved over $6 million by cutting McCoy, mm-hmm. and they're going with a much cheaper kind of rotation here.
Yep.
I don't foresee any of these guys being someone I want to put in my lineup at least to start the season.
Yeah. Yeah. So moving on though, Marcus, one thing I wanted to bring up too was the Houston Texans just went nuts over the weekend.
Yeah, they did a whole
Bill O'Brien was wheeling and dealing like a madman, and bringing in Laremy Tunsil is such a good move. If you have Deshaun Watson, bringing in Kenny Stills is such a good move. If you have Deshaun Watson, not if you have Kiki QT,
not so much
potentially
Kiki QT or Will Fuller.
But Watson could legitimately, and I think you and I agreed on this before this all happened, that Watson could legitimately push Patrick Mahomes for being the QB1 this season. And now the Texans have made some moves to fortify the offensive line, give him another weapon in the passing game, and a guy who can take it deep. This was a nice weekend for Deshaun Watson. There's no question about that.
The people that took Mahomes that's actually another conversation. The people that took Mahomes in the second, third round of their drafts are going to be pissed.
Because he could have gotten Watson fifth, sixth, seventh, depending on how your league rewards quarterbacks in terms of scoring. And then if you go to the flip side on that, right? So they also brought in Carlos Hyde. Whatever. Maybe he takes some goal line work away from Duke Johnson. I don't see him as a major dent in terms of his value. But Miami is going to be the offense that everyone streams defenses against all season long. Not only do they have Fitzpatrick under center,
their offensive line
is garbage, so, and it just got worse. Ravens are going to eat. They're going to score 20 fantasy points in week one, and every week you're going to want to look ahead and see who's playing the Dolphins to stream defenses against them. I think if someone benefited from the moves, Albert Wilson is a little bit more attractive to me.
Yeah,
I liked him as a deep
I had, I had a draft yesterday, and I took
season.
Him late.
Yeah.
Yeah. Took
yeah,
him late.
I mean, that's, Chad O'Shea, if he follows suit, which wide receiver is going to benefit in that offense? The slot receiver. Albert Wilson's going to play a lot of the slot. You got Devontae Parker there. Preston Williams also sees some increase in value as well. But, I mean, you know, we talked about, like, McCoy and the whole running back situation. But that whole thing in Houston – that had fantasy implications.
Yeah. Real quick before we move on about the Texans receivers, getting Kenny Stills kind of makes this receiver corps even more flexible. Like being able to put Kenny Stills on the outside and move DeAndre Hopkins into the slot, for mm-hmm. example. Like it just gives these guys more room, I think, to line up all over the formation. I'm very, very excited. I mean, the Texans offense is going to be so.
You think these guys are going to run like a lot of 10 personnel?
I hope
with the addition of Stills.
If Bill O'Brien were smart, which is jury's still out, Texans should go like extremely pass heavy this year, mm-hmm. and they have the perfect offense to do. Duke Johnson's a fantastic pass catching running back. They've got four great receivers. They've now actually got a decent left tackle. They should just air this thing out.
Yeah, I don't.
I'd love for them to go 10 personnel.
I don't see them running the football a whole lot. this year. I just don't. I don't think they're built for it. So.
Or Deshaun Watson.
Yeah. Here's the thing. And like now I'm definitely, because, you know, I was definitely the Andrew Luck would be the QB one. But obviously, for obvious reasons, that's not going to happen this year.
RIP.
So, yeah, I can get behind Deshaun Watson. Yeah. Taking over that spot. Jerick McKinnon.
We'll
miss another season. He was placed on injured reserve as he is continuing to deal with a knee injury. Look, I know that for the last couple of weeks we were all fading McKinnon, and Matt Breida was becoming the second running back of choice there in San Francisco. I just put this on here just because I sort of marvel at how things change over a couple of months, right? Like, we were talking in what, March, April, like, man, I don't want any part of this backfield. I don't know what's going on. There's so many guys there to now it's pretty much cleared itself up. It's pretty much worked itself out. Tevin Coleman's the one. Matt Breida's the two. And we move on. I don't know.
Coleman will get 60% of snaps. Breida gets 40% week one. And Breida has the opportunity to flip that on its head this season. I'm excited about this backfield. The Niners face the easiest slate of run defenses to start this season, too.
Yeah, I mean, week one, Tevin Coleman is got to be in your lineup, even if he's flex. No question about that.
Yeah, I mean, I think we knew there was the potential for there to be some good running backs out of this backfield. We just were confused about which ones they were going to be a few months ago. But, you know, hey, time clears things up.
Yep, and that offense, very conducive to running backs having success.
Yeah, I mean, that's what Kyle Shanahan does. Last bit of news, a couple of first-round wide receivers from the 2016 draft were let go by their respective teams. Josh Doctson out in Washington, Laquon Treadwell out in Minnesota. The Treadwell one, I think we could all sort of see coming. That really never clicked there. Doctson, maybe a little bit more of a surprise because it seemed like he was always on the verge of something and just never quite got there.
The Redskins went out and got two receivers, though. They got Terry McLaurin.
Yes.
Kelvin Harmon. I mean, that's...
You know who you should be grabbing late, though, is that Trey Quinn.
Trey Quinn, I know, is the name that everybody wants.
Yeah, I mean, obviously Jordan Reed, as long as he can stay healthy. But he's coming off a concussion in the preseason. But
I could see just sort of like the Dolphins, just no Redskins being fantasy relevant every single week, besides maybe Geis.
Maybe Geis occasionally.
Yeah. Leagues, but that's it.
That's about it.
Yeah.
So,
between them and the Dolphins, fantasy wasteland.
Things are bleak in that part of the fantasy world.
So, yeah.
There you go. That's pretty much everything you need to know.
That was the news.
All right, so I know for some of you, you are still doing drafts, and you'll be doing drafts probably, you know, who knows, all through the week. But for the majority of people, they've had their drafts. Draft season is over. We're sort of packing things up and getting things ready for the actual regular season. So I want to just kind of talk about some of the things that we kind of took away from this draft season. Had a few questions as I was kind of pouring through ADPs and looking at stuff. The one thing I took away from this, or want to know, I know in the past we sort of use preseason as a measure of who's going to be on the field when, how the touches are going to be distributed. But as we've kind of gone along the last couple of years, right, teams are using their starters less and less. We know the Rams don't play them at all. More teams are starting to follow that mold. They're starting to kind of use the preseason to figure out how the rest of their roster is going to stack up. Can we still use the preseason as a measure of trying to figure things out? Or are those days sort of over now?
We can. I'll say, I mean, the samples are getting, they got a lot smaller this year. We saw way fewer teams play their first team. The Chargers basically didn't play Phillip Rivers at all. Drew Brees played 8 snaps this preseason. I mean, it doesn't make sense to risk your key starters in just these meaningless exhibition games, especially guys that have been around for a super long time. I think this trend will continue to the point where maybe in a few years the preseason is almost like worthless for us to project opportunity.
There may be fewer preseason games in our futures.
That's also most likely the case.
Yeah.
I still think it's super valuable just to like see also like how certain players are progressing year over year. Like James Washington was freaking bad.
Awesome. And he still didn't move up in my drafts.
Yeah.
Like I got him late in a couple of leagues. Like people aren't buying in because they see Dante Moncrief ahead of him on the depth chart.
Like young players do get better year over year. It's great. It's nice to use the preseason as a tool in that sense. And also, I mean, obviously use it for usage purposes. But like you mentioned, Marcus, I mean, it kind of sucks. Like we can't really last year was a great, this is probably one of the best examples I can remember of preseason usage, right? Is like Cam Newton and Christian McCaffrey were on the field together literally on every single play for like 50, like basically a game's worth of plays. And it was like, oh my God, Christian McCaffrey is never going to leave the field this year. And he never did. Those situations and those types of play areas where we can significantly project usage have definitely gone down.
That's where I see a lot of value in preseason is, you know, seeing which players are playing which players, right? I mean, you know, we're trying to find out, you know, who's going to be the starting running back in Tampa Bay, or, you know, who's going to be on the field most, wide receiver. Like, right. You know, we saw Chris Godwin basically was on the field every snap that Jameis Winston was under center. I mean, we kind of already knew, but that's a nice little indication that we're on the right path there. So, but what will be funny is that besides James Washington, the other like preseason hero was Jacoby Myers.
Mm-hmm.
And let's see if that translates into anything during the regular season.
If he actually gets snaps.
I mean, we'll see. Yeah. He may or may not. If they bring back Demaryius Thomas, which has been reported, he may not. But we'll see what happens.
Yeah. That wide receiver group is sort of a mess.
It's always a mess.
It's sort of a mess.
It's always a mess, man. Edelman is the only constant.
The only constant, man. Speaking of wide receivers, we have gotten to a point where I know we always look at the position and we say it's deep, right? There's a lot of guys out there. But as I started to kind of go through ADPs again, right? You hit a spot kind of in the, you know, fifth round, sixth round, where you're sort of sifting between a lot of guys that have almost similar value. Like, you may not be super excited about them, but they're not necessarily going to, you know, go bust on you. So it just made me wonder, have we reached a point, Fabs, where is the wide receiver deep? Or is it just there's a lot of bodies? Because I think there's sort of a difference there.
No, I think it's deep.
Okay.
There's a ton of talent at that position. And I was in a draft last night, and I decided to go running back. I had done it a couple of times over the course of the draft season, still have three drafts left. And, you know, I ended up with Robert Woods, Chris Godwin, and Kenny Galladay. And, like, I'm happy with that. And I will tell you this. A source of mine, by the way, has told me that Cooper Kupp, if he is not the wide receiver in Los Angeles to target on the Rams, he's close to Robert Woods, and that Brandon Cook should be third, and it's not even a question.
Yeah,
not even a question. And he's a source who's around the Rams, so take that for what it is. But do not forget, if you have drafts, that Cooper Kupp is Jared Goff's guy, and if he's out there and healthy, and it seems like he is, do not let Cooper Kupp fall too far in your draft.
Cup or Coop? Sorry.
Get a Coop.
Sorry. No, it's definitely deep. You mentioned you started a draft with two straight running backs over the weekend. I started our Fantasy Live League draft with three straight running backs. Mm-hmm. I went DJ, Chubb, and Devonta Freeman. My receivers are still Chris Godwin, Robbie Anderson, Allen Robinson. I got Geronimo, Marvin Jones. Like, it's just deep. Like, there's teams are throwing more. More receivers are seeing more targets. It's kind of spreading out the volume.
Yeah, and if there's
40 or 50 guys that you could feel comfortable starting on every on a week.
I mean,
basis.
Think about it. Like, you know, Mike Williams, and you've got Dede Westbrook, Curtis Samuel, DJ Moore. And now we got Josh Gordon back. Like, there's just so much talent at the position. Calvin Ridley. It's crazy. Like, I have no problem going into a PPR league with Robert Woods and Chris Godwin as my top two. I don't have Michael Thomas. You know, I don't have Julio. But my running backs are going to be pretty stacked.
Yeah.
So I'm fine. I'm good there.
I mean, that's sort of how I'm feeling, but I'm also sort of like, you know, these are guys that will have some spike weeks and some just disappearing weeks. And I guess that's sort of the thing,
sure,
that we don't, you know, outside of, I guess it's this way with every position, right? After you get past maybe the third round, there's so much more variance.
But you build around that, right? So if you start your league with three running backs, in theory, those three running backs are going to be gaining and consistently gaining
every
the majority
week
of your points. Mm-hmm. So if you have these spike week receivers, like you mentioned, Robbie Anderson's my number two receiver in this league, for example. He's not going to always be a consistent 10 to 15 point guy, but he's right, going to have some of those spiked weeks. And when he has a week that's on the lower end, it's fine because I've got three stud running backs that are propelling me every single week.
This team that I drafted last night, I thought of you because this was like, if you and I drafted a team together,
I saw you got Chubb and Godwin.
I've got Chubb. I've got Godwin, Woods. I've got Miles Sanders, your guy. I got Lamar Jackson, Curtis Samuel, Mike Williams. I mean, the one thing I got Eric Ebron, I'm not real thrilled with, but everyone went tight end so quickly that I just punted it until the end.
Yeah.
And then I grabbed Chris Herndon, and eventually he'll be my tight end one, I believe.
Speaking of the Patriots wide receivers, news just broke that N'Keal Harry is going to be on IR. IR Boomerang, as our friends at around the NFL have coined it.
But his stock went down so fast.
Yeah, I loved him coming out of Arizona State, but it has not been a good start to his career. So
dealing with three different injuries right now. I think ankle, hamstring. Didn't he have a hand issue earlier in camp
at some point? Yeah, so he is on the injured reserve, designated to return. So we will likely see him again this season, but it won't be.
Hey, Marcus. Jacoby Myers.
Hey, Marcus. Mm. Josh Gordon.
Dude.
I'm just going to say,
you're so excited. Gordon. Just the look on your face, man. It was,
can't wait, man.
That's hilarious. we talked a little bit about Zeke and Melvin Gordon. So this is the second year, though, that we've had major holdouts that are extending into the season. I don't think we've figured out how to deal with these yet. I mean, because I guess there's so many variables. There's so many unknowns. We go into the season. It's one thing you're talking about a holdout who's, you know, kind of a mid-round guy or whatever. But, like, we're talking about guys who potentially are first-round fantasy picks holding out. I don't know if we can come up with a plan. I just don't know if it's possible. But this is becoming a normal thing now, it feels like. I don't know.
It's an annoyance is what it is. It gives me a headache.
There's no way to know how to forecast these things.
You can't.
Unless you're literally in line talking with the agents, you know, like you just can't. You can't project these things. Nope. I wish there was a way, but there's not.
And which is the thing that, you know,
all we can do is read the tea leaves.
Right. And I know we all get tweets about it, people asking, you know, what should I do? When is he coming back? And my response has just been to be open about it. Like, I don't know. I really don't. All I can do is read all the same Twitter reports that we all have access to and give you my best guess. And I think anybody who tells you they know for certain is not your friend and is lying to you.
Yep.
So, I don't know. That's all. Looking at guys who kind of moved up, moved down over draft season. For you guys, there's a guy that you loved more as draft season went on, a guy that you loved less as draft season went on. Who were some of the big movers for you this offseason?
Oh, Carson, for me, I moved him up big time. He's at 13, and I've been trying to get him in my drafts. I just feel like Rashad Penny's not going to put as big of a dent in his touches as maybe we had projected initially before preseason began. In that offense that's going to run the ball a ton, he's really moved up for me. Chris Godwin has continued to move up for me. I've been all in on him since last season, and I think he's going to have a huge, huge campaign. Lamar Jackson's moved up for me as well. I've got him ahead of, you know, Tom Brady and Ben Roethlisberger in my quarterback position in the preseason rankings. And then, you know, dudes that have fallen, I'm kind of with you on Damian Williams. Like, I love the situation. I love the fact that Andy Reid's running backs have always had success. He was great last year, small sample size towards the end of the campaign. But I didn't get him in any of my drafts, and I don't know if it was subconsciously because I was concerned that he couldn't handle being a featured back at the NFL level for 14 to 16 games. I'm not sure. But the fact that the Chiefs brought in LeSean McCoy, partially because he's got a relationship with Andy Reid, of course, from their time in Philadelphia, but also maybe they feel sort of that way too. Mm-hmm. And Dante Pettis is another guy that I was pretty high on going into camp, and I've kind of cooled a little bit on him as well. So I don't have any shares of him either. Just a lot of mouths to feed there in San Francisco.
Yeah, one of the big ones for me is Leonard Fournette. I kind of went into this year expecting Fournette not to have very much, but his cost has just kind of remained in the third round. I mean, he's going to be a bell cow back on a significantly improved team with his offensive line back healthy. Fournette is definitely someone who I thought I would be out on this year because I figured his price would move up at some point, but it just never did. He's just stuck as a third round pick, and I've been loving that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm with you, Fabs, on Chris Carson. Like, I was really big on him. A guy that in the last couple of weeks I've started to sort of buy in on has been Carson Wentz at the quarterback spot. Just, you know, the idea obviously is that he has to stay healthy, but just remembering how good he is when he has been healthy and been on the field.
And the Eagles' depth on offense is just it's unbelievable.
Right.
It's unbelievable.
Yeah.
I mean, they have the deepest receiver corps. They have the best offensive line. And now Miles Sanders offers versatility that he hasn't had. Carson Wentz has not had in the backfield.
In some ways, it reminds me of, you know, the Saints from 5 or 6 years ago where, you know, you knew Drew Brees was a guy you wanted to have on your roster. The wide receivers were sort of hit or miss because you just didn't know whose turn it was going to be each and every week. But it didn't, you know, that didn't affect the quarterback at all.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, it people are sick of dealing with Carson Wentz's injuries, and I think he's now gone from like overrated to underrated back to being overrated, then now he's underrated again.
Right.
He has the QB1 upside. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Like, he could finish the season with 40-plus touchdowns and maybe a few rushing scores and outscore both Mahomes, Watts, and Rodgers. Like, that is within his range of outcomes this year, and he's stayed cheap.
And can we agree that, and I've seen him go a little bit higher in recent drafts, but can we agree that Luck's retirement sort of boosted him a little bit? Because he's that one guy that was sort of next in line to potentially be a top five fantasy quarterback.
Him and Cam. I think it was him and Cam.
Right.
I've kind of valued them pretty similarly.
Yeah. On the flip side, you mentioned Andrew Luck. I mean, that really changed how I felt about Marlon Mack. I felt a lot differently about Marlon Mack a few weeks ago. Now that Andrew Luck's not there, everybody in that offense sort of takes a hit, and Marlon Mack was one for me.
I didn't get lucky on Damian Williams, but I definitely got a little bit lucky on Marlon Mack. He was never going in a range where I felt comfortable because there's so many receivers I liked around his ADP, mm-hmm. and now it's just like... The spiked weeks will be really nice, but the floor is a little bit scary.
Yeah, I still feel at the end of the day he's going to end up being a top 20 running back this season.
If he stays healthy and he gets all the volume, it'll be hard for him not to, because of the position and mm-hmm. the scarcity, but yeah.
But it's not as...
You were buying Max because he could potentially finish as a top 8 running back.
Right.
Because of luck. Yes.
Latest update on As the Patriots Turn.
Oh, boy.
They have re-signed Demaryius Thomas to a one-year deal.
There you go.
That was not a big surprise.
We're breaking news.
Yeah.
We are breaking news. Not a big surprise. That was sort of the report a couple days ago when he was let go, that there was a very good chance he could re-sign with the team. So now it is official. N'Keal Harry is on injured reserve. Demaryius Thomas is back in the fold. I don't know. I don't know how much we think Demaryius Thomas has left. I don't know. I'm not super excited about him.
Marcus. Josh.
It's all about Josh.
Random. This isn't even on my rundown, but I don't know if you the Des Bryant posted that he's out running routes and he's hoping to be back in the league.
Didn't he
mid-October.
Say like 2 months ago that he was just like chilling? He's like, I don't really need to play.
Now all of a sudden he's saying he wants to be back in the league
Maybe
by mid-October.
He's got the itch.
He's got the itch again. So, I have a feeling that, you know, if he signs or if he looks like he's getting back in the league, I'm sure we'll all get plenty of tweets asking if you should pick up Dez Bryant. And as we sit here on September 2nd, I'm going to say, I don't know. So there you go. Last little bit of draft season news. The thing that we want to remember for next year, right? When we get here this time next year, late August, early September, what is the thing that we want to hopefully have taken away out of this year? And to put into practice next year, Graham, like maybe it's a mistake you made at some point. It's something that you sort of learned just by doing mock drafts and actual drafts. Just a thing you want to just store away for next season.
Yeah, one thing I'm going to try and do next year is I typically do a bunch of best ball drafts just in preparation to get ready for this season, but also to know like where players are going and be in tune with ADP. If I feel strongly about a certain player in like June, if let's take, for example, Curtis Samuel is going in the 10th round in June, I need to be way more aggressive in trying to draft that player on every single team because there is an advantage. Sure, you're going to run into situations where Damian Williams loses value and you picked him in the second round. Those situations suck, but the equity that you can gain by drafting earlier, I think is significant. And if you feel very strongly about a player should be going 3-4 rounds higher, I need to be a lot more aggressive in trying to get that guy in all of my teams early in the year if you're drafting super, super early. If you're a degenerate like me, this only applies to like maybe 2% of people listening. But,
Yeah, for me, you have to really take everything that you read with a grain of salt on social media because fantasy Twitter jumps on everything. There's underreactions. There's overreactions. Typically, there's overreactions with almost every bit of news. And even insofar as hearing reports that LeSean McCoy is going to be a big part of the Bills offense. I mean, I always bring it back to like when Nathaniel Hackett was the OC in Buffalo.
And
he told us all that CJ Spiller was going to get the football
until
he throws up. And the only people that threw up were the fantasy owners who drafted him because he was awful. So
Never believe coach speak.
Right. You always have to take everything that you read and you see with a grain of salt. And I would also suggest people out there, listen, you're fantasy fans, you're NFL fans. We will influence you somewhat. At the end of the day, it's got to be your decision on what you do and what you believe. So when Andrew Luck retires, you're smart enough to know, I don't think it affects T.Y. that much. I'm not going to move him down too much. Or I think it's going to affect Eric Ebron a ton. we're here, we're useful guides, we have the information, but at the end of the day, be sure that you're very careful not to swing too far one way or the other based on news that may or may not actually be relevant. And remember, it's your team and they're your decisions. You're smart and make the best and most educated decisions out there when you're doing your rankings and drafting your teams.
My thing is, well, one, Bob Harris, who was on with us last week, had a great bit of a great line to say.
Yeah, and I remember.
Don't draft last year's best team,
exactly.
which is fantastic.
Yep.
But the other part of it is, look, I know we spend a lot of time looking at, you know, at guys' skill sets, right? And I know everybody likes looking at spark scores and spider charts and all those sorts of things. And they're very fun. Athleticism doesn't matter as much as fit. Right. And I think I really recognized this about a week or so ago when, you know, I'm reading people, especially on Twitter, like really pounding the table for how much better of a running back Kenyon Drake is than Kalen Ballage. My response is, OK, sure, he probably is. I'm not really going to fight you on that point. But everything that about that backfield says the Dolphins are going to give Kalen Ballage plenty of opportunity. And so it doesn't matter how much better one guy is than the other if he's not going to be on the field and getting the ball. And I think that applies across the NFL. Sure, we can look at guys and say that this guy's super talented and super athletic and he can jump out of the building and this and that. But if he's not on the field and if he's not getting targets or touches, it doesn't really matter.
Usage and fit is everything. Your perceived evaluation of talent rarely matters. It rarely matters. The only thing that matters is who's going to be on the field, like you mentioned, and how they're going to be used when they're on the field.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think that's it. So, like, you know,
That's what we should all be projecting is, like, who's going to get touches, and then when they're on the field getting those touches, how are they going to be used within the context of the offense?
Look, if we had been drafting right after the combine, DK Metcalf would have been like a second-round wide receiver, you know?
We sat right there. I'm still blown away thinking back, watching him run the 40. I mean, it was, like, freaking, like...
That actually reminds me of another situation, too, where Fantasy Twitter went all in on Hakeem Butler, and he was the greatest thing in the world since sliced bread, and now what?
And now, yeah, he's...
And
now I'm taking late-round dart throws at Keyshawn Johnson.
Right.
Going back to that thing in Indy, though, I just remember, because if you're there, it's just very quiet. As everybody's running the 40, you don't hear much. But when Metcalf's time popped up, you just heard this murmur just go through the building. Ooh. It was wild. So, hey, so there you go. That's our draft season wrap-up. Hopefully you are happy with your teams. But if not, well, that's what the waiver wire is for. So that's a perfect segue to our preseason waiver wire here. There are plenty of guys that are still out there that didn't get drafted in a lot of leagues. If these guys are off the board in your league, then sorry for your luck. You play in a league full of smart, speculative people. So I don't know. Try better. But anyway, our preseason waiver wire, I put a handful of names on this one. The first one, I said just Bills, right? Frank Gore is still out there. His role looks like it could possibly be increasing with LeSean McCoy gone. Cole Beasley, John Brown, a couple of guys that I have been taking kind of late shots on because especially Cole Beasley, I think, is going to be sort of a safety blanket for Josh Allen in that offense. But I know people look at the Bills and they don't necessarily get excited about it, but I think there are reasons to be optimistic about this offense this year.
It's just the same conversation we had, but how do we project the targets? Like outside of John Brown, I mean, is Cole Beasley going to see 5 to 6 targets per game or like closer to 8? The Bills don't really have a tight end, but yeah, it's going to be super annoying when Frank Gore gets another 150 carries this year.
I know, it is. It is.
I'm just planning on it. I'm not even going to be surprised when it happens. I'm just expecting it.
Yeah, for me, Marcus, you know, I'm looking at our NFL.com ad drop data, and Justin Jackson is only owned in 50% of leagues. Tony Pollard is available in over 50% of our leagues. Kalen Ballage is available in over 50% of our leagues. You guys mentioned Frank Gore. He's another player that needs to be owned in more fantasy leagues. And let's go a little deeper, too, because a lot of our listeners are in these competitive leagues. You know, Leonard Fournette, I get it. We like him, but he's had some off-field issues. He's had some injury. Rykel Armstead is a guy who's going to be on the waiver wire in a lot of leagues. Justice Hill, if you like to play the game of upside running backs who could potentially make an impact behind a established veteran, he's in that mix as well. James Washington, I see him available in a lot of leagues. Maybe not competitive leagues, but I do see him out there. Geronimo Allison is another guy. I mean, there's players out there. Michael Gallup.
Yeah.
There's so many guys out there that I wish maybe we should just make our rosters bigger so I could just eat up all these upside guys that are still free agents.
If you're in like a 12 or 14 team, like any type of deep league, Raquel Armstead is such a nice stash because of Fournette's injury downside, and he's a clear handcuff. Their number three running back right now is Divine Ozigbo, who's a UDFA, got cut by the Saints. Mm-hmm. He is clearly their number two. Right.
Who was a guy, you know, it's funny, too, because early on in draft season, I was taking Raquel Armstead kind of late, and I stopped doing that, and I keep an eye on his name, though, just because what you mentioned, Leonard Fournette, yep. His injury history suggests that he may not be there.
Alfred Blue. That's a
Alfred Blue.
Apparently a hard name for me to say in the morning. He was put on IR over the weekend, yep. too.
So,
and then, you know, if you're looking in deeper leagues, I mean, Deshaun Hamilton is not been drafted in a lot of leagues, and I get it. Sanders is back. Hopefully he can sustain through a full season, but, I mean, he's a miracle man right now coming off the Achilles looking the way that he has.
Yeah, Emmanuel Sanders is a guy.
Debo Samuel, I mean, there's depending on the size of your league, obviously, but there's a lot of talent out there that could end up making an impact. And remember, guys, every single year it happens, and it's going to happen again. It might happen in week one. We'll see. Somebody's going to go down. Somebody's going to step up. Somebody we didn't expect, a la Philip Lindsay last season, is going to be a fantasy star this season.
Yeah, Manny Sanders was the guy I was definitely kind of trying to get in a lot of places. And I think after that game against the 49ers, that got a lot harder to do. It got a lot harder to do. Jamison Crowder, I don't know if you mentioned him, too. That's a name that I've started to kind of – it looks like he's going to get a role there.
Yeah, especially for the first 4 weeks of the season without Chris Herndon.
Yeah. So Jamison Crowder's a name I've started to get excited about as well. I'm, like, kind of low-key – excited about the Jets offense this year.
Oh, I thought you were Loki. Like,
oh, like I'm, like I'm,
yeah, I thought, oh,
I'm Thor's evil mischievous brother. yeah, not so much.
Yeah. Derek Carr, which don't touch him in week one, horrible matchup, but I mean, he's available in, you know, over 80% of our leagues right now. And I get it. The quarterback position is deep, but he does have AB, Tyrell, Josh Jacobs around him. He could end up potentially being a guy who could be useful. I mean, Josh Allen's 23% owned in our leagues.
Yeah.
23%.
Yeah. So, you know, and this is, look, some of this is owed to the fact that, like, you know, we spent a year looking at this stuff. And for a lot of folks, you know, they're just checking in.
Same guy. So, 6%.
Yeah.
They're just checking in for a lot of folks. So, I sort of get it. I understand. So, yeah. We're ready, right? This is it. We're ready for the season to start, right?
We are.
We'll be back in a couple of days, and we will preview all of week one. The season gets going officially on Thursday with the Packers-Bears. So we'll talk about that, plus the whole slate of week one games. We have made it. We got through this together, everybody. It took some Game of Thrones recaps. It took some Best Shape of Our Lives updates. But we did it. We made it through the off season again, and we're glad that you are back with us for another fun ride. So that's it. We are done. We appreciate you downloading and listening. You know the drill. As always, tell two friends to tell two friends. Rate, review, and remember, regardless of your taste in music, you got a better ear than Van Gogh. We'll see you on Wednesday.